When it comes to flying your drone, trial and error is not a strategy. It's insanity. Insanity. So get your drone questions answered by the experts so you can save time and money by lowering your learning curve. And now your hosts, Rob Burdick and Paul Aitken.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another awesome episode of Ask Drone You. My name is Paul.
And I'm Rob, and you're listening to episode number 264. And as always, we thank you for spending a few minutes of your day with us.
And we definitely thank you. And we also appreciate all of those FPV questions we've been getting. Rob, it's been growing. I mean, it seems like people are really into racing nowadays.
Yes, I definitely think FPV racing has hit the tipping point.
Ooh.
Because it is crazy how much more we're hearing about it and much more interest we're seeing in it.
It's true.
New podcasts are coming up on it from even friends of ours, actually. So it's really big, and we're grateful to have a special guest here.
We do have a very special guest. And before we tell you who the special guest is, if you've got FPV questions, if you're getting into FPV racing and you are just so stoked to get away from the FAABS and move into FPV racing, which many of you have, and I totally understand why, I haven't made that jump yet. Hopefully, thanks to our guest and the upcoming class that we're going to be doing on building an FPV racer. It'll have an advanced track, a beginner track, and really teach someone how to get up and get started and build the best type of racer for the type of racer that they are. Really excited about that. Really excited about getting into racing myself. But what we're going to do here at Drone U is we're going to have this special guest on time and time again to answer your FPV questions. So if you have a question about drone racing, be sure to go to askdroneu.com and upload that question. But now to our special guest, Rob. He won the Canadian Drone Nationals.
That's pretty cool.
He flies at 90 miles an hour. All right.
Is that into the wind or with the wind?
I don't know. Good question. But welcome, John Casey.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
Pretty good. It's good to be here today.
Dude, it is awesome to have you here. It is awesome that you are going to be a part of this podcast now and talking about all the different aspects of FPV racing, because you are the pro. I mean, I flew with you the other day and I was like, my mouth hit the floor, seriously.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to get more involved.
Definitely. And I actually learned a couple things, and we're going to get into our question today, which talks about FPV goggles and getting into all that. But I learned a very important lesson, Rob, when I went flying with these guys.
Tell us more.
I was with Andre. I was with a couple other Drone U members. And
that there are pilots better than you.
Yes.
Ooh, that must have hurt.
That wasn't my main learning point. But, thanks for bringing that up. I learned that you should actually put the last obstacle of the course like at least 100 yards away from where everyone's sitting down.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No, other than safety. But is there a reason beyond that?
That's a good reason, actually.
That's pretty much exactly why.
Yeah. Okay. There was a racer who turned the corner going, I don't know how fast.
Probably at least 40, 50.
Yeah. And hit the top of one of the obstacles, and then it flew into the where everyone was sitting.
Yeah, it came real close to hitting us.
But it didn't hit anybody.
No, it didn't hit anybody, thank God. Thankfully.
Yeah, that was a good lesson learned. No one got hurt, and we know what to do now.
Now, I thought there were nets around a lot of these
normally
courses.
Normally, an organized race, we have nets out in front of the pilot area, where if something like that does happen, it gets caught or something like that.
Have you ever seen one of those drones hit the nets at like high speed?
Oh yeah.
Have you ever seen one go through a net?
No, I have not seen one go through a net. I've seen one go under nets, over nets. Pretty much if you have any sort of opening in the net, they're going to find a way to get through.
Yeah, I would think that as fast as those things are going obviously you guys are great pilots, but that's a difficult thing to control continuously for that long of a period of time, I would think.
Yeah.
Well, the caveat, though, Rob, is that, we're used to having batteries that last 15, 20 minutes. How long do your batteries last?
2, 3.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
So you've got 3 minutes to pound pavement as hard as you can.
I did not know that.
Isn't that crazy?
So because it's all about weight, right?
Pretty much.
Smallest batteries you can get away with for a given race.
Yeah, even just in the last 6 months since it's gotten really organized, we've to come down in battery size and up in power. It's been pretty crazy.
And right now you're working with some experimental motors, right?
Yes, I am.
I gotta say, I actually took some audio the other day, Rob,
uh-oh,
of these things. I mean, they have the, they make the coolest noise.
That is really cool.
I gotta say, it's like a mini F1 racer, like going around.
It really is. It's amazing. It's amazing how powerful they are. It's truly amazing how fast they go.
Yeah. Like I said, it's gotten pretty crazy. Just in the last 6 months, we've probably doubled in speed and have the weight.
I mean, this has really only been around for what, like 24 months, like 2 years?
Yeah. So mini quads have only really been around for about 2 years.
It's and like racing, calling your child 24 months old. You just don't do that, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, my bad.
No. It's only been around since about the summer of 2014. And organized racing has only been around for maybe 10 months.
Which is interesting.
That's
because
astonishing.
We're seeing the proliferation of the Drone Racing League,
right,
which is a heavily funded group now. And there was already a Drone Racing League. Like, they're kind of pulling the drone U. They put the in their website, so it's the DRL.
Kind of like the Google?
Or
no, that's not
the
right.
Facebook.
The
we're
Facebook.
Just going to be like Facebook. You know, we're going to take the out, and everyone's going to be like, oh, Drone U. Yeah, we get that.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, but if for any of you who have any questions pertaining to racing, race courses, anything, make sure you ask those questions at AstroNU, because John, you're going to be around for a while, right?
Yep. I'll be here, and I'll be happy to answer any questions anybody has. I have a pretty unique insight into the whole...
Well, weren't you the number one racer in 2015?
Yeah, I was on the IDRA top 25. I was the number one racer
for
2015.
Wow.
That's pretty
awesome.
Cool. So ignorance is bliss. And I'm saying that because I'm the one ignorant. So what is IDRA?
IDRA is the International Drone Racing Association.
Okay.
Always association with sports.
And
yeah, it works.
They're putting together, they did the California Cup last year, and they're actually a big deal in the World Drone Prix that's coming up in Dubai.
Dubai.
Oh, okay, yeah, I don't know if everybody's heard about that. If not, check
it
out.
If you haven't heard about that, you're crazy. But I actually have some interesting news. I haven't even told this to Rob yet.
Uh-oh.
And Tim.
Should we do this on the air?
We probably should, because your reaction may be noteworthy.
That's what I'm afraid
of. So the Dubai races are, what, March 11th, right?
Yes.
Right? I got called to do a job wake surfing March 12th in Dubai.
Oh, wow.
I'm not
And
kidding.
You declined. Good job.
So who knows? Might go out there and see you guys
nice.
Race, but might not, according to Rob's reaction. But anyway, Rob, why don't we get into today's question? And what I wanted to say, too, about IDRA, there are multiple leagues. You know, there's the new Drone Racing League. There's the old Drone Racing League. There is Multi-GP.
Multi-GP, Aerial GP.
Who's the leader right now? What is the common guy using? I mean, like, what is the races that are really substantial, significant?
What the common guy is using is definitely going to be Multi-GP.
Multi-GP.
They have hundreds of chapters all over the world at this point. We have a local chapter here in Albuquerque that's Multi-GP that races at least twice a month.
And Sean Taylor, right? He's in that. And he won the big XDC race, the one that was in Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yes,
you know,
recently, right?
The big lit up one that was during CES.
Yeah.
So we've got so it looks like the local talent here in
Albuquerque. It's kind of like MMA.
Dude, yeah, we're known for chicks that kick ass and for dudes that race drones.
Well, and there's some dudes that kick butt, too, around here.
Yeah, but no one cares about them.
That's not true. You're listening, we care.
Yeah, no, we do.
No, there's some tough
Rob
dudes.
Does.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
I wouldn't want to say that to their face. I'll just say that.
But from a room that they don't know where it is.
That is true. Hey, we're in this studio, and it's green in Albuquerque. Cool. Come on by. So, Rob, why don't we go ahead and play that question that we've got today. And again, guys, if you have a question, be sure to go to AskDroneU.com and upload that question for John to answer.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Tiago from Canada. Hey, I was listening to the podcast about the FPV goggles, and I saw that Paul was mentioning about the Fat Shark. And one day I was looking into those FPV goggles online, and I bumped into the Cinemizer being the like one of the best ones. But the price was a bit expensive. It was like $1,000 or $1,000 something. So what do you think about the Cinemizer, and why not? Like, is it that different from Fat Shark? And also, I think the Zeiss is releasing the VR1, and Samsung is releasing those. I don't know how what it's called. I know it's a VR, virtual reality. But what do you think about those ones for FPV? Is that a good option? Okay, thanks a lot, and take care.
So last time when we were talking about the Thatchart goggles, we were actually talking about that because you answered that question kind of behind the scenes here, and we mentioned it. So, you know, he's asking about the Cinemizer goggles. Why do you use the goggles that you use? Which goggles are they, and what would you say about the Cinemizers?
Well, that's a great question. I personally use Fat Shark Dominator V2s. And I use those mainly because that was pretty much the top of the line when I got them.
Okay.
4 months ago, 5 months ago.
But you say that the V3s to not go with, because this is a question, Rob, that you actually, that we talked about earlier, is why not go with the V3s? Because they were like significantly cheaper.
Right.
So for racing, the Dominator V3s, I wouldn't recommend because they have a 16:9 aspect ratio.
Okay.
So it stretches your video feed out and it makes things kind of wonky. Well, yeah, as you turn to bank, it makes the whole world shift. It's kind of weird.
Is it like doing drugs in the hip, like during the hippie age, and like that's what it's like looking at?
So we actually talk about that. We actually joke about that a lot. Sometimes when there's bad video, it goes super psychedelic.
Dude, what's going on with my feed, man?
And seriously, what do you do then, though? I mean, you basically sometimes hope for the best. That you make it through it coming back?
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta kind of hope for the best sometimes, or figure it out before the race starts. But I've had several races where you plug in, walk over the line, put goggles down, and everybody's ready to arm, and the sky is green, and it's not
trippy.
Great all the time.
So it makes me wonder, and I can't think of what another sport. I mean, you have people that they say to visualize success, take golf. Or
be the ball.
Take, you know, actually something that comes to mind is a downhill ski racer.
Okay.
They do the run several times, and then they have it essentially memorized in their mind, the course they're going to take, the path they're going to take, when they're going to speed up, when they're going to jump, all of those things. So is that happening in racing so that when it goes out, for example, you have a sense of where you're at? You've basically got it memorized.
Yeah. We try and practice as much as possible on the course that we're racing. I wouldn't necessarily say that it's down to that level where you have it memorized.
Yeah.
Because
should it be?
Maybe.
Will the best pilots be like that? I mean, because like I'm thinking about like when I drive in my car, you know, and I'm hitting this corner at high speed. I'm looking at where the apex is.
Oh gosh.
And, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing that in
Montgomery
my car.
And San Mateo.
But yeah. I mean, is it like that?
Speaking of Sean Taylor, he definitely is one that does that. He gets out and goes and pounds a course over and over and over and over and over, and once he gets that in, he does talk about how the multi-GP universal time track, he could do it in his sleep because he was
so that's the real trick, right? Do it without goggles.
Well, yeah, I mean, see, that actually reminds me of the Michael Phelps story that was on Freakonomics, where they talk about how Michael Phelps would actually be introduced to obstacles when he was training. He would be swimming blind, he would be swimming without goggles, he'd have one goggle that was filling up with water. And on his very first gold medal trial, like where he was swimming for the gold medal, his goggles filled up with water and he was blind, he couldn't see anything, and he won a gold medal without having vision.
Wow.
So I mean, I think this is a perfect example of how, yes, you know, obviously practice and introducing problems, and if you can fly it blind literally, then you're going to be at the top. And I guess Sean is one of those guys who's at the top.
Yep, very much so.
But it helps explain why he's there.
Definitely. Yeah, the guys that are at the top sit and pound out laps after lap after lap after lap at not only at events, but practicing as well.
Right.
Gotcha. So now with your goggles, what's going on with the Cinemizers? What do you think about those? Because one of my questions with the goggles is, as a regular drone pilot, I'm super used to recording on board, meaning I'm recording video on my drone when I'm flying around to get the crispest, nicest feed possible. But you guys don't do that. You actually record through the goggles, right?
Yeah, and when it comes to actual races, almost everybody tries to record through the DVR in their goggles.
Gotcha.
And the higher end Fat Sharks, the Dominator line definitely, mm-hmm. has the DVR built in. Historically, they haven't been the best DVR.
Gotcha.
Like, if you accidentally unplug your goggles before stopping the DVR, it can either corrupt your footage or shift it up 10% to where the top 10% of your screen is actually on the bottom.
This is why John is teaching the FPV class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the kind of insight that is fantastic for people that are interested in this.
Oh, totally.
That we have no clue about,
no
honestly.
Idea.
So,
no idea.
Again, thank you for being here. But so are you familiar with the Cinemizer?
Yeah. So one of my buddies, he's, I think, the only person that I've seen that uses Cinemizers for FPV, Bapu. He flies them, and they're great. They have really good quality of screens. They're OLED screens. The only thing is that their field of view is really tiny compared to, especially again, the Dominator line of Fat Sharks.
Right.
So when you mean field of view, are you talking about like if we're looking at a standard video feed of, say, it's like a 35 millimeter equivalent, we're actually cutting that down to a smaller view space.
The best way for me to explain it is sitting 5 feet away from a 42-inch TV. Uh-huh. Compared to a 30-inch TV.
So okay. Do you think they do that on purpose, though, to try to make people more accurate in their flying?
Well, the Cinemizers...
tunnel vision, you know?
The Cinemizers are actually... They were originally developed for, like, portable home theater use.
Ah.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's why they're $1,400.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're made by Zeiss, so that's a big name attached to it as well.
So, speaking of Zeiss, there were other goggles that Tiago had mentioned... the VR goggles. What do you think about flying drones with virtual reality?
So a lot of people are trying to do the VR thing right now with not only the new Zeiss VR goggles, but people have been trying since DK1 of the Oculus Rift. The only problem right now is our video feed is analog, and all of the virtual reality stuff is digital.
Huh.
That's
so
awkward.
You have to have a converter to get analog to digital. And it adds latency into the loop.
Now, why is that a big deal? Because this is something that you were explaining to me in the office last week. And then when we went out and flew, I actually realized just how important latency is, because I didn't realize how much latency there is in the Inspire video until you see a drone go, "Yew!" And then like in your video feed a second later,
So it's a big deal with racing, because I mean you have to have the fastest responses possible, especially to get the fastest times and to be able to hit gates and stuff like that. Taking out every millisecond possible is a big deal.
Right. So okay, so for our beginners out there who are maybe even thinking about this but they don't know anything about it, explain latency.
Latency is the amount of time between your fingers moving the sticks and your drone actually reacting to that.
And the video coming back from the drone itself. So you've got multiple
that
points.
That whole loop, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got multiple points of latency. You've got latency from the remote to the vehicle, from the vehicle to the camera, and then from the FPV of the camera to the goggles.
Yeah.
Got it. And you need all of those to be as fast as possible.
To be as fast as possible to not crash, because we use super high rates and lots of stuff like that. We're trying to cut out literally every millisecond possible.
Gotcha. That's very cool. Again, all of this awesome information coming from John Casey here, Canadian Drone National. So when you are in Canada, do you finish every sentence with A?
So it's funny that you mentioned that. It was in Ontario, and while I was up there for a week, I'm pretty sure that I saw every Canadian stereotype that was possible.
Yeah.
Including like poutine at Wendy's.
You know what I think of?
Wow.
I always think of
it's
that
like green chili here. Huh?
Yeah. I always think of the like 1990s music video where it's like a bunch of, it's a guy and a girl and they're riding orange motorcycles down the street. Like, I forget the name of the song, but it's like, dun, 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 dun. That's what I think of. Anyway, it probably doesn't make sense to anyone but me, but
but we all appreciate
it. Oh, yeah, I got to sing on the podcast. So any other thoughts? I mean, Cinemizer, VR goggles, Dominator, what's a good entry level pair of goggles that someone could get if they're getting into FPV? Because Cinemizer goggles, $1,400, some $750.
Yeah.
Dominators are what, $500?
HD V2s are $500, something like that, almost $600. I would recommend, I think it's Attitude V3s, Fat Shark Attitude V3s.
Uh-huh.
They have the same optics that are inside the goggles that I use, the Dominator V2.
Okay.
And they have a module port, which the old Dominators didn't have. It has a head tracker built in, I'm pretty sure.
What is a head tracker?
So that's something that you wouldn't use for racing, but maybe for like an Inspire or something like that.
Oh, where you can move your head around.
You turn your head
to
and the camera move. Yeah.
Oh,
dude,
that's
I
cool.
would have a heyday filming with that thing.
Oh, that sounds man. Fun.
You're just like, look left. Reveal girl on the right. It would look cool.
Moving my head makes me a little nauseous.
I could see that.
So I don't have a problem with getting nauseous, either in VR or under the goggles, whatever. But for whatever reason, if I'm moving my head and that's not what's going on with the quad, it makes me feel really weird. Not necessarily nauseous, but disconnected.
So you couldn't do the whole shake my head thing when someone does something bad because you'd just be like nauseous with
every
turn?
Yeah, it's a really weird disconnect feeling for me. And I know a lot of people, there's the leader of the multi-GP chapter here, Sean Stanford. We call him Stevie Wonder because he's just all over the place. When he turns, he's looking where he's turning and all kinds of stuff. A lot of people
do that. Oh, that's funny. That makes sense, though.
Yeah.
Because you probably don't even know you're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah. He didn't realize for a long time that he was doing it.
I love that. So we're obviously making the presumption, and maybe for very good reason, that if you're going to race, you're going to use goggles. Does anybody ever race with just a screen?
Andre does.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's right.
A handful of people do race with a screen. I know.
Are they good? Are they any good?
Yeah,
you can be competitive.
There's a guy from California. I think he's only 18. For a while, he was racing with only a screen, but he just recently got goggles.
Okay.
See, I like the screen aspect of it because I have a screen for my Inspire and my Phantom 3, and a lot of people are like, why don't you use an iPad? Well, I use a screen because it's a much better FPV feed.
Right.
But it, you know, as a regular drone pilot, if I can save $500 by not buying goggles, you know, I'm probably going to use my screen just like Andre did. You know, I don't
Definitely.
Blame him at all.
Yeah, that's also a big thing in the racing world is trying to get as much as you possibly can with the least amount of cash.
Of course.
That's pretty much true in every world.
Yeah.
Well, maybe for us, but not for the girls because they're like, this coach purse, I mean, it's going to make my hips look really good. And it may be $1,300, but do you know how good I'm going to look because of this purse?
That's right.
So, that's a big reason why very few people even have tried the Cinemizers because they are that much more expensive.
Yeah.
Like, again, the high-end Fat Sharks are $550, $600, and I think the low end of the Cinemizers is like $750 US.
And so in your estimation, it wouldn't be worth that jump?
No, not necessarily, especially when you come to the field of view thing. And yeah, they have good, crisp video, but our video's not the greatest anyways because of the analog and all of that. So in my opinion, having a little bit bigger field of view is much better, and having the ability to do DVR and
that's a big thing.
The module that plugs into Fat Sharks to be able to pick up your FPV feed. It's a big thing.
Yeah, and they're made for racing.
Yes. Yes. And there are other things out there like the head plays, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about. And they're a big box that goes on your head pretty much, and it's a single display screen versus two small screens like in Cinemizers.
I see that big old box thing?
Yeah, pretty
I've
much.
I've seen those things.
And so,
I got to admit, I laugh when I see them.
No, yeah, it's huge. And they're really, really good quality.
I think I would
quality.
Like that, though.
Well, especially for somebody like you, I think you would like that because it's a big, almost high-definition screen. And again, when you talk about latency, the head plays have a little bit extra latency than other goggles.
Imagine.
And they do have a receiver built in and all of that. But for flying a plane, flying an Inspire or a Phantom, aerial photography type stuff, the head plays are awesome. But for racing, it's almost too big, as well as the latency. I find myself having to like eyeball around the inside.
Yeah,
and
you're just looking for your bird in there, probably.
Yeah, and it stresses my ocular muscles and stuff like that. So I like having the Fat Shark, the Dominator HDV2s are almost the best size for me because I'm not looking around too much and I can still focus on the center.
So would you say that most of the guys that you fly against, and maybe gals, I don't know how many girls are out there racing, but...
I see some girls.
There are a couple. Sean Taylor's wife is actually one
cool.
of them.
Very cool. Yeah. So would you say most are using the Dominators?
Yes. I would say probably estimation 75% of people are using some sort of Fat Shark Dominators, whether that be the V2, the original HD, the HD V2. And so a lot of people I know that bought the Dominator V3 have then turned around and sold them and bought the HD V2.
Really?
Yeah.
So did they skip the V2 or they went back to the V2?
So the HD, it's kind of confusing. There's a difference between the Dominator and the Dominator HD.
Okay.
And so there's...
It gets intricate. I can imagine.
So there's the original Dominators, and then there's the Dominator V2 and V3, and then there's HD, Dominator HD and HD V2.
So your level of abbreviations, Rob, is about to double. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Just more acronyms to add to our world, right?
Abbreviations, acronyms, yes. Yeah, that is so true.
Cool.
And now I got to learn all the FAA acronyms because the pilot's license, it's like, oh, no. But you know what?
You guys are young. You got a lot of room in them brains.
Now, one question I have, and I don't know if our audience will really connect with this or not, but I'm just wondering. You said you don't like to stress your ocular muscles. Do you ever leave a race and you're like, oh, man, my eyes are tired? Like,
no, but I use Fat Sharks and I'm used to it. And so I pretty much keep my head and my eyes straight when I'm under my goggles.
Gotcha.
Compared to, again, like head plays or even... Dominator HD V2s are a little big, but they're, like I said, that's almost the biggest that I would want to get. I think it's like a 40-degree field of view is what they call it.
I bet Stevie Wonder has a sore neck when he's done racing.
Yeah, well, so when I first switched to goggles, because I've flown FPV for almost 5 years now, and I only switched to goggles 6 months ago.
Oh, really?
And my ground station with 1.3 gigahertz video and UHF control got stolen.
That sucks. Ugh.
And so that was 2 weeks before U.S. Drone Nationals.
Ooh.
And so I went out and I got a pair of Dominator V2s for U.S. Nationals.
1.3 gig would be awesome to fly on, especially for you, because everyone else is on 5.8.
Yeah. And it's so clear compared to 5.8. It's crazy.
Huh. Hmm. So, well, I guess that's just going to have to be a question for next time.
That's right.
But just for you guys wondering, John Casey will be answering all of your FPV questions, so make sure you send those in, askdroneu.com. And Rob, we're actually coming up with a new class here. I mean, we've kind of hinted at it a little bit, but John Casey is coming on board. He's going to be a DroneU pilot, which I'm really excited about, that we're
Me
moving
too.
Into the racing.
Yeah,
we've got three classes filming right now we're really excited about. And this is one of them, and we're going to talk about how to build an FPV racer, how to get into races, these specific nuances that you're hearing about from the experienced guy. I mean, that's what DroneU is all about, right, Rob, is teaching from experience.
Absolutely, and what I love about what John's going to do for you guys through DroneU is do the different levels. So it's not going to be, for example, a racer for just the expert or just the beginner, but we're going to figure out a way to kind of make it cross all those boundaries.
Yeah.
And help everybody out no matter where you're at.
Definitely. And I'm excited about that, you know, because I'm a beginner. I feel like I'm in Tim's shoes right now with drones.
Well, he doesn't want to fly, so I don't think you're in those shoes.
Okay, wrong shoes. Rob, your shoes? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe my shoes.
You know, Rob, I don't know if you've seen the Sima that we have here at the office.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Rob has been practicing his FPV racing with that.
Nice.
That's right. I'm ready to take you on.
Nice.
I'm just going to try to run into you.
Anyway, John, we are so happy to have you on board. Thank you so much for being on the show. And guys, again, if you have FPV questions or if you just have a regular Drone U questions, be sure to go to askdroneu.com, and we are giving away Polar Pro filters right now. So make sure you get those questions in. Right, Rob?
That's right. Let's clarify. Right now we've got Inspire 1 filters. We're going to see if we can get some more.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to send my brand manager an email.
Anyways, just want, if you've sent in a question and you've got a Phantom 3 or something, well, I guess it'd be a Phantom 3, just know it might be a little while before you get those.
Yes.
Because we're still waiting to get them ourselves. But if you've got an Inspire 1.
For all you guys that have the big birds.
That's right.
Anyway, we just want to say thank you again to you guys. Thank you for the reviews. Thank you for the shares. It's because of you that we are growing, and we really appreciate it. We appreciate every mention on social media that you guys give us. So thank you very much. Again, if you know someone who's new to flying, tell them to check out the Don't Crash Course. It's don'tcrashcourse.com. We've got a lot of new exciting classes coming up in Drone U and an entire change of our web interface. Really excited about that.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
So anyway, guys, thank you so much. John, thank you again.
Yep, thank you.
And Rob, I think that's going to do it for us today. So my name is Paul.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Ask Drone U.
Thanks for listening to the Ask Drone U podcast. Be sure and tune in next time to your personal experts for answering your drone questions, Rob Burdick and Paul Aiken, so you can keep lowering your learning curve and save time and money. Time and money.